and welcome to another in a series of live community conversations here on Radio Catskill. I am not your host, Jason Dole. I'm just getting things ready for our host and our fabulous panel that's waiting to talk to you live here on International Women's Day. And who you will be hearing from tonight, we've got Haley Flores joining us once again. Haley's head of Sullivan County Black and Latino Asian Caucus and currently continuing her education in sociology so she can represent her community and affect positive policy change and increase the visibility of migrants and undocumented people in the community. Ashley Riley, special ed teacher at Minisink Valley High School, originally from Owego, New York. Ashley Riley, special ed teacher at Minisink Valley High School, who's lived in Sullivan County for the last couple of decades. Ashley is a parent of students who attend the Monticello School District, an active attendee of the board meetings there. Before teaching, Ashley worked as an engineering consultant. Tiffany Barrow is a Hudson Valley School principal. Sullivan County residents probably know Tiffany Barrow better as former assistant high school principal for Liberty Central School District, or for her time as a school improvement math specialist administrator for Sullivan County BOCES, or for her work with our local chapter of the NAACP in county. And Deborah Warden, executive director of Action Toward Independence. Deborah Warden's executive director. And Action Toward Independence is an independent living center serving Orange and Sullivan counties. They run a hub. They are a hub for crucial information and resources for people with disabilities, their families, and the community. Deborah Warden can be heard as a guest on Radio Catskill's Veterans Affairs program, Let's Talk Vets. And now, that's your panel. Those are the guests. Let's hand things over to your host for this conversation, Adrian Jensen, Executive Director of Sullivan County Human Rights Commission. Hello, Adrian.
Hello. Thank you. I want to thank WJFF for holding this space for important conversations that affect our community. And I want to thank our guests for showing up. Without both of these ingredients, we would have no show. So thank you. I value how busy people's lives can be these days. And since we are honoring women today, I would be remiss in not including an acknowledgement of the many hats women often wear, and honey, we still get it done. So let's dig in for some relaxed, good new-fashioned girl talk. So it's International Women's Day, and you may wonder exactly what that is. Well, it's a day that focuses on the successes, the many successes of women and the many challenges for girls and women throughout the world. For over a century, Women's Day has existed on different dates, but the UN began to recognize it on March 8th, back in 1977, and the date has stuck. So each year now, there is a theme, and this year's theme is hashtag break the bias. And don't you know, bias is the subject of the last couple of years, both internationally and locally. Unconscious bias has been the form of bias in the spotlight, and rightly so. Typically, we think of bias related to how one group, for this evening's discussion, men, have a particular perception that leads us to have a prejudice in favor of or against something or someone. And for this evening's discussion, that would be women. The thing is, discrimination can happen consciously or unconsciously. Everyone has bias. It is ingrained in us from a young age by trusted sources like parents, peers, and media. We are usually all educated or miseducated by similar sources. So as women, we can hold similar biases against our own selves. This evening, I would like to take a look with our guests at some of those biases and the stereotypes that drive them. How do we women define ourselves? How do those identities stand in conflict with how others see us? In fact, how do we contradict our own perceptions of ourselves as women And can we talk about that wage gap and how women are only earning about 82 cents for every man's dollar? How do we bridge this gap and hashtag break the bias? So good evening, ladies. I'm so excited to get a chance to have a conversation with you. And to our esteemed panel of women, I'd like to start this conversation off by asking you what it means to be feminine. What does it mean to you to be a woman? And by luck of the draw of the alphabet and your last name, Tiffany, you are first. I'm wondering, what does it mean to you to be feminine or to be a woman?
Is that Tiffany?
Yes, that's you, Tiffany.
Okay, and I do have to apologize. And let me just say this. As a principal, I was late leaving work for principal duties. So I am a little shaky in my speaking. Please let me know, okay?
Well, you know, Tiffany, I already prefaced this with the many hats we wear as women, and you just proved us correct.
Okay. So I do want to say my perception has changed over the years.
Okay.
As a child, I grew up as a pastor's daughter. So I was told that I wasn't dressed up unless I had a hat on and gloves and stockings. You know, to dress the part, you know, and I was raised with bows in my hair and, you know, just giving you a walking through a journey in the beginning of my life. And as I got older, I started seeing, my mother hold many hats. So she was a business owner. And then I saw her, you know, she was able to pay bills, and it wasn't always that she had to sit pretty with those gloves and the hats on. You know, when we were outdoors, you know, you looked the part, you dressed the part, but at home, she was able to do some things. And even as a young woman growing up, like, I wanted to fix the VCR player. Like, I wanted to learn how, you know, to do some things that my big brother, who was 10 years older than me, couldn't do. I was the baby female in the family. So when I was outdoors, I looked the part of what I thought it was then, you know. And then as I got older and you get to meet new people and you go through life's experiences, your idea of who you are as a woman changes. And I hold many hats. As a woman, I know I pay bills, you know, I look the part, you know, as some may say, but I also work very, very, very hard each and every day. And I think a woman is true to her heart. Whatever it is within your heart that makes you feel like a woman, that makes you stand tall as a woman, makes you a woman.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Tiffany. Haley, you are next. What does it mean for you to be feminine? What does it mean for you to be a woman? What kind of characteristics does a woman have or not have?
Yeah, oh man, that's a great question, because I always imagined to be a woman, Like Tiffany said earlier, you go through many stages and you're constantly figuring out who you are and what does it mean to be a girl, then a woman, and then, like, I don't know, an old maid, I don't know. But it is definitely a journey of trying to see where you fit as a, I hate saying this term, but as a female. But for me, I could just recall being younger, just much like Tiffany was saying, like, she always wanted to do what her older brother was doing. I was the one that was tagging along with my brother instead of my sisters, doing, I guess you would say, like, boyish things. And I because of that, knowing that it was opposite of what my parents would agree as feminine, I just kept forging through. I'm like, you know what? No, I'm going to play in the dirt. I'm going to take apart this radio with my brother. I'm going to do all these things like that my sisters aren't interested in doing because it's just going to leave bruises and scrapes, you know? So for me, it's definitely being feminine could be anything you want it to be. Whether it's you were born as a woman or you're identifying as a woman, it's how you want to forge your path through this world and how you're supporting those who are, you know, behind you, supporting your back also.
Okay. Thank you very much. It's interesting when you say bruises, it brought me back to, I was like a serious tomboy when I was growing up, and my mom used to say, and she was very much a feminist, mind you know, but she used to always say things to me like, you're gonna scrape your shins. I mean, forget about it. Like, I had so many bruises and scars up and down my shin, but you know, somehow that was very important to her. Let's see, Ashley, you are next. What does it mean to be a woman for you, or what did it mean to be a woman for you, maybe? You know, how did a woman speak in your mind, and you know, maybe what did she wear? Any of those things?
Well, firstly, I would say I was, my mother was a terrific role model growing up. And so I got a lot of my what means to be a woman through watching my mother. Mm-hmm. And I would say her characteristics, I saw her as being very nurturing. So I think of like someone who has a garden, who, and as far as I'll get to that, as far as my abilities at gardening, but just someone who can nurture, someone who can take care of anyone in the family, whether it's nursing wounds or being a listening ear, helping with homework, helping with cleaning people's like wounds or just cleaning them after they've eaten their dinner and made a mess. So I just see women taking on the nurturing role, and I see them also being the conscience, perhaps, of a male counterpart. Mm-hmm. Not that men don't have a conscience. I just think that women play a large role in being that supportive complement when it comes to that. I also see that women, as far as when I felt womanly, was when I had to be responsible for my own child. So I think that when somebody's in a position where they have to take care of their siblings, like actually be the person to take care of their siblings, whether their mother, father need help with that, or if you're at an age where you have to take care of your parent, I think that's when you start to take on roles when you're responsible for somebody else, not just yourself. I think that's when you can become into the woman role. And again, that's probably with the nurturing and taking care of others.
So your gardening skills are on point, or not so much? Just out of curiosity.
I really wish. I'm like the person that wants to get a fake plant just to have something green, but doesn't have the heart, because I really want something alive. So it'll come to that. I'm very good at jade plants. Okay. If it's something low maintenance, I can do that.
Okay. All right. Thanks for clarifying that. So Deb, what does it mean in your mind to be feminine? What does it mean to be a woman? And when did you first feel like you became a woman?
That's really a good question, Adrian. And very much like Tiffany, I grew up in, you know, local culture here, you know, agricultural farm family. And so the gender roles were very defined. And we don't have we didn't back then have the vocabulary we do today to talk about, you know, our various genders and the roles that we play. And so dressing the part, feminine to me was, and this is kind of ubiquitous for women, is pearls. My aunt wore pearls. My grandmother wore pearls. You know, I have a pearl necklace on, you know, International Women's Day. So it's things like that, that, you know, I equate to feminine aspects. So I think for me, when I became a woman or felt that I came, is when I moved out and I was on my own. I was 18 and I had my own job, my own apartment. And I felt, you know, but I don't know if I necessarily associate that with just feeling more adult, you know, and that was when I definitely had that feeling. So, but I think that I'm grateful also that I looked at how I was raised as women being a support network, that it was the ladies' auxiliary because men weren't in a fire department, for example. So it was the Eastern Star because women weren't in the Masons. It was the other, you know, type of organizations that were very female centered that I actually was exposed to because of, again, that, you know, our upbringing that we had. So, and now those very unbelievable times have come upon us and wonderful things that, you know, those boundaries are greatly shifted. And now there are women in a fire department and, you know, it's just an auxiliary, not just ladies auxiliary. So I'm, you know, happy to see the evolution of our role as well.
Thank you. You know, it's so interesting because something else that I'm thinking is that as I grow older, I question what it means to be an older woman. You know, like I look at Super Bowl and, you know, media and women trying to maintain, you know, like, oh, did you see what she wore? She was able to wear this and able to wear that. And I kind of wonder where the examples are to look toward for growing older as a woman. You know, I'm gonna for a couple of minutes, maybe you guys have just a thought about, you can jump in any order, but like, you know, just a quick shoot of like, what does it mean to be an older woman?
I think one of the big things, and I think I'm the oldest woman on the panel right now, to be honest with you. So I think it's about identifying an inappropriate expectation. What are we expecting of ourselves? What are other people expecting of us? And then, you know, again, I think it was Tiffany that said, what's in your heart? Mm-hmm. You know, and what do you feel comfortable with? I'm not here to judge if someone wants to have perhaps plastic surgery or something done, you know, to make them feel better or whatever the case may be. It's whatever makes you feel good about yourself and that you are in a good place with your mental health, especially. And so that's kind of how I look at it. So, but I just really think that we just need to stand up and say, I'm sorry, there's no way that my, you know, face will ever look like that at 80. Okay. That's just not going to happen. So, and then just be more realistic. And, but it is challenging, definitely with children.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyone else?
I mean, what's
if I can talk about
what?
It's like the aging part. I'm like, yeah, I mean, we're all aging, aren't we all? But I feel like as I get older, I don't know, I kind of like fall more in love with myself, like definitely understand more what it is to be a woman, or even worse, I think I now understand what other people expect of me as a woman at this age. Sounds so gross, but like at this fertile age, you know, like there's always like these weird expectations from someone like in my age group, or these expectations of what women in their 50s suddenly disappear like through people's vision, you know, like they don't see them as people anymore at that point. It's a huge health disparity, even seeing women in those brackets, considering we already have so many freaking brackets to fill in, like the nurturer or the other person. Someone said to be the opposite of like the logic thinking. So that's just how I feel about aging. So it's another thing to worry about.
Tiffany, if I can just jump in, Adrian, for a second while I have connection, I think that's an excellent question, and I my mind goes back a little bit, and I'm gonna stay at the heart, because whenever you see that, I'm not saying that older women can't dye their hair in a provocative color or a different color, but I noticed whenever I was going through a situation in life, I would make a change. Like, so if I was, say, for instance, going through a heartache, I might get gray contacts and dye my hair red or blonde or something like that. So I think as you age and as you become who you are and you're comfortable in yourself as a person, then you can then accept whatever it looks like or feels like to grow older. It's okay to grow older. You know, they call those women that are old because they're wise. And who are the wise women that are talking to the younger generation? We have to come to some type of just some type of reality in our mind that there are generations for a reason. So who is going to stand as an older person and pour into the younger generation? Or are we still trying to be young until, you know, we just can't be young anymore? Nothing's wrong with being old. Sorry, that's just all I have to say.
You know, you're making me feel much better about aging. Thank you. And it's so true. I feel like, you know, as I get older, I just kind of don't care as much. And I don't mean that I don't care about myself, because I feel like I'm even more important, you know, to myself, but, I'm like, you know what, whatever, I'm going to wear this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to say this because it's me and it's true and it's real, you know? I wanted to take just a moment to, you know, in case we have listeners that are coming in, late, to say that you're listening to the International Women's Day panel, a live community conversation here on Radio Catskill. And I'm your host, Adrian Jensen, and I'm speaking with Tiffany Barrow, Haley Flores, Ashley Riley, and Deborah Warden. And, you know, if you guys have some thoughts that kind of overflow from the last portion of our conversation, feel free to interject them. But I'd like to change gears slightly now and talk about times when your identities that you just spoke about don't match up with how others see you or how you move through life as a woman, and times where the identity that you drape yourself in doesn't hold true. So where do you have, in what places do you find some cognitive dissonance? We're going to go in the same round. Tiffany, you're up. If you're in a place where, you know, you have reception.
Get me while you can.
Okay.
So what I would say is I was a teenage mother. Okay. I did not always follow the path that was set before me and getting married first and doing everything that I was taught to do. So in that sense, I had to become the breadwinner and had to do everything for my child. I had the example with my parents on different roles, but I had become a role that was a dual, you know, at the time my children's father were not, they weren't in that, and at the time I wrote, so, you know, when I should have been kicked out of Catholic school, I morphed into being the class body president and being the student body president rather, and maintaining high grades while working and while cooking and while helping the children with the homework and then working some more and helping my son, you know, who is now a military man with a master's degree serving our country. But I had to be that
Tiffany, can you say that
one more time? It doesn't always fit the part. You can imagine.
You said you have to be, and then I think that was an important word there.
I was saying I could have been a statistic, you know, where people will view me as, you know, African-American young mother that is, you know, has to go on welfare and has to do something. But I defy the odds where, you know, now I'm in a doctoral program. You know, my children, you know, have graduated from UNC Chapel Hill and you know, school. So you can defy the odds. No matter what situation you're in, it does not matter. Whatever's in your heart, as long as you put your mind to it, I don't care if you're in the same position as a man. I don't care if you're a corporate executive and people don't see you the same way. You keep believing it, baby, and you're going to make it.
Wow. Thank you very much. That is very powerful, a very powerful testament. I'm wondering, Haley, what about for you? You know, where have you found that the identity that you hold for yourself doesn't always match?
Yeah, it kind of feels like almost every single day, every waking moment of my life. I just say that because, like I was saying earlier, there are so many layers to being a woman. You know, there, you have to think of like socioeconomically, where do you stand? Ethically, where do you stand? Maybe even your sexual orientation. Are you part of the LGBTQIA? Are you, like, there's so much that you can identify with. And then within each identifier, there's even more, it gets more narrow. And I think that's a great thing, right? Because it really allows you to hone in more on yourself. But I find that when I am in the world, I'm in public spaces, and if I'm presenting myself in a certain way, I guess if I'm dressed nicely, people would immediately see my hair, see my curls. They would immediately see my skin color that's brown. They would immediately tell that I have dark hair features, and just, you know, immediately, boom, Latina. What do they think of Latina? It's like, it's hypersexualized. It's super belittling for the most part when you think of like the stereotypical biased views of Latina women, and like, we're crazy, we're loud. I'm not loud. I can get loud if you really want me to, but I don't like it. I'm a pretty logical person when I speak. People are surprised when they hear me speak. Especially a lot of my friends are like, wow, you speak so well. And I don't understand that. Even growing up, when I was younger, people say, I like your accent. I never had an accent. I don't remember there being an accent, but I'm pretty sure I never had an accent. I've been here since I was like 2 years old. This is what I know. Yes, Spanish may be my first language, but I'm almost positive that English is my better language. but yeah, I mean, it's how I face in front of other women sometimes could be, they would think that I'm intimidating, or men would think I'm aggressive because I speak at their level, or I give it back to them when they don't expect it from someone like a small person like me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's every day I face with it, over the phone calls at work, over face to face with patients. It's hard. It's like you guys were saying with aging, like as I have gotten older, I've gotten to know myself better, and I know who I am, true to myself. But it is hard to constantly prove that to other people when they are already made yourself up in their mind. You know, they already know who you are.
Does it ever make you feel less feminine?
It makes me feel less of a human. Absolutely. I don't know if it makes me less feminine or more feminine, because I think if anything, it kind of like highlights the fact that I am a woman. So it's like, here you are, I'm going to other you because you are a woman. So if anything, it's like just really pointing that out, that I have a vulva and you do not, you know? But yeah, there's so many complexities, and I don't know how to define femininity because I never felt feminine when I was in my teens or in my 20s. It really wasn't until maybe the past 3 years that I felt really feminine because of that confidence, of the aging, of the wisdom. But yeah, definitely a lot of dissonance every day.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and it's fun as a woman to be able to kind of move in and out of, you know, that, you know, where one day you can be feminine and you can also choose to not be on a particular day. And it just, you know, whatever feminine is for us, right? You know,
right.
You can make those choices. And that is something that I enjoy about being a woman. You know, hopefully at some point in time, that will be more fluid for everyone to feel comfortable in that, you know, in that place. Ashley, what about you? Where does it happen for you in your life that the ideal that you have of the identity that you have for yourself as a woman doesn't always match up, or, you know, what you have told yourself about, you know, being a woman, where you get challenged because you've got to be a little different than what you had in your mind or what you thought you were?
Sure. I think probably the best example I can give is when in my prior career, when I was working as an engineering consultant and I had a lot of men that I worked with, and I have a brother, I have cousins, I'm comfortable with climbing trees and, you know, jumping over rocks in the creek, and I did those things, and there was a comfort with having guy friends versus the cattiness that can happen sometimes if you've been burned by some female friends, especially ones that are close. So I would say that my experience with feeling a little bit of, like a fish out of water would be when I worked amongst a lot of men and young men.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say with that experience, I still dressed in a dress. I still was myself as much as possible. In my experience, there were some negatives to not being, to fit in the same ways, but there was a lot of positives as well. So in my experience, it balanced out. I really didn't feel like the deficiencies were too much. And when I say deficiencies, it's just one of those things where two men are going to be able to go out and go have a beer or something together, and they may not invite me. It's perhaps because they have wives. They don't, you know, it's inappropriate. So there's those things that happen. But on the flip side, I had many relations, like professional relationships, obviously, but I had communication with men, and I felt as though I had, there was less competitive nature with it. Perhaps where I thought that if I asked and if I asked for assistance after I had worked to find the answer myself and I still was troubled by it, I would present what I've already looked for on my own and I would ask for some advice and input. And oftentimes people would be receptive to it. So I'm not really sure if that's the same way. I'm not sure if that was typical in the office place. From my experience, I could still feel feminine, still be the person that I am. And I don't recall any times where it was ever really a negative. A negative overall. I kind of felt, if you don't mind me saying, I kind of felt at the time, because this was a while back, Condoleezza Rice, I felt that she at times was the one that went in and she was maybe the peacemaker and she was brought out to be somebody that was even tempered and maybe received better off than some men that might have been a little bit more brash. And I, at the time, she was an inspiration for me and someone that I saw in a position that she was in a power position and she still had femininity.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you bring up a really interesting point, which is that, you know, how do we, how do we exist in a really still male dominated space and not have to I don't know how to say this, but like not have to exhibit stereotypical male characteristics in order to be seen. How can we just be ourselves, you know, and have that be enough? But anyway, we can comment on that later, but I just want to make sure that I get to Deb. Deb, you know, bringing up the rear, Deb, I'm asking, you know, where, does your identity as a woman experience some sort of dissonance? You know, I was thinking about some places where, like, you know, I always think of women in the military, you know, you know, do you think that there should be a draft that includes women or no? You know, can we be strong women and still be feminine, you know, Ashley, you were bringing up Condoleezza Rice. And so, you know, I think your answer would probably be yes to that. But Deb, what about for you?
I think many really good points are made. And I think that Haley also made a very good point that perhaps the experiences that I've had or Ashley have had are also different because we're white, you know, and I think that that does have an impact as well. And I want us to acknowledge that, you know, we are perhaps perceived a little differently, especially on a local level, because, you know, you have that kinship or relationships and you know a lot of people, if not related. So I think for me, one of my aspects also is it's not just about dealing with the men and our role, but sometimes it's other women. And I think one thing, for example, when Ashley was saying about like going out with you know, a couple of guys and just, you know, having that experience, I would work a lot with volunteer fire companies and helping them with grant writing. And they usually have evening meetings. So I would go at night. And I actually had a girlfriend of mine say, "Aren't you afraid? Like you're going into this place with all these men." And I laughed and I said, "I'm not afraid of the guys. I'm afraid of their wives, you know, because here I'm calling them at night, you know, asking them questions about their proposal. And, you know, they're wondering who this woman is." And, you know, I was not perceived at all that way by any of them. But perhaps someone else might have thought something. And another point was when I drive a lot, I travel a great deal. I love a road trip. And I was going to take my kids to an event or somewhere for a weekend. It wasn't the best weather. And a woman had said, "Oh my God, you're driving. I was a single parent. You're going by yourself. You know, like, how could you consider doing that?" And I thought, I have Visa, AAA, and a cell phone. I can go anywhere. And I think that it's important that we also support each other in our various roles. And, you know, sometimes those biases are coming from our kinship that, you know, we have. So just throwing that out there, Andrew. Thank you.
Wow. Visa, AAA, and a cell phone. I feel like that should be a t-shirt for International Women's Day. you know, it's kind of it's interesting because you're kind of leading into the next topic. So I'm just gonna take a quick break and let latecomers know that you're listening to the International Women's Day panel on Radio Catskill, and March 8th is always International Women's Day. And the theme this year is #BreakTheBias. I'm Adrienne Jensen, your host for this live community conversation with Tiffany Barrow, Haley Flores, Ashley Riley, and Deborah Warden. So far, we've discussed our identities as women, and we've touched on the conflict that we have to negotiate as we try to elevate our status of the status of our gender. And these negotiations seem to get even more complex as we enter the workspace, as Ashley was just talking about. And a workspace that is typically dominated by men, particularly in managerial positions. 73% of managerial positions are held by men. And why is this still the case? Equal rights advocates reported that a white woman working a full-time job typically earns 82 cents to a white man's dollar. This means she has to work about three more months before her earnings can equal that of her white male counterpart. The amount of time increases substantially for Black women who earn 62 cents on that same dollar, and even lower for our Latina sisters at 55 cents. These barriers often become greater as we throw in motherhood. Who's gonna care for our children while we're at work? Can we even afford to work? I mean, I just mentioned how women aren't going to get paid an equal wage for equal work, and childcare is costly, especially in New York State. Yet in general, women offer up care and domestic work at three times more the load than men, and for free labor, people. With divorce rates as they are, this puts women in a fragile position, and as does being in volatile relationships out of fear that we won't be able to provide for our families and ourselves. And this free care is not really valued on a resume. So I ask you, my esteemed ladies, what needs to happen to get rid of this gap?
Men. I'm just joking.
Men need to happen.
They need to be getting rid of.
So we can go in a varied order because I see Ashley has got the solution and I want to know what it is.
Oh boy.
Go on, girl.
Okay. So I can only speak on the experience that I've had again.
Okay.
I worked for a local engineering firm. It had a medium amount of staff, about 40, 50 staff. And I know that they paid women equally as men as per what they could, what they offered, the amount of time they were there and things like that. So I'm just going to say that's my experience.
So they had transparency.
Not necessarily. I think like any job, it's, you know, no one's business, but the person that is. Yeah. I mean, okay. They didn't outwardly say, because it's not like you're working for, like, I'm a teacher now, so everyone knows my pay now, but if you're not public, then it's private. And, okay. But people talk. And so I didn't feel that at the place I worked, which was refreshing. I also think my husband is also an engineering consultant, or back then he was. And so I was able to see what another company comparable to the one that I was at. And I'll say, generally speaking, men are working a lot more than the women, because what you said, the women go home and they take care of the kids and the men stay later. I'm just saying typically, I'm not saying that that has to be, or I don't want to misrepresent anything there, but I'll just say typically it's the men who will work the extra time and stay there. So actually I ended up going to teaching because I didn't think I could perform as I used to prior to when I had children. So when I started a family, I looked to see what I used to be able to perform, the level I used to perform at. And I didn't see how I could balance home life and that work life. And that's why I went into teaching. But I can understand if there's somebody that can be more valuable to the office because they're spending the more time, you know, they're spending more time at it. So I would have to know, I've heard the statistics before about 82 cents to a dollar. I don't refute that. I would just want to know, are they talking about apples to apples here? So just from my engineering firm that I worked at, apples to apples, I saw, and this was 10 years ago, about 10 years ago, apples to apples is they were treating the women as the men in pay as far as experience.
And I think that that's great because it really, at least for me, that idea, you know, makes one feel seen, you know, and appreciated and valued. That's not how it you know, traditionally serves up, but, you know, but I think that you were very lucky to have that experience and you know, that's more of what we want to see.
Agreed.
Does anyone have a, yeah, go ahead, Deb.
I could, so my experience is varied over the years and it's a long history. And I remember working at one institution and we were interviewing for a position and I was told by the director at that time that we should consider X candidate because he is a man and has a family and is the breadwinner. So that's why we should consider hiring this person. Statistically, unfortunately, those numbers that Adrian has quoted are very accurate, especially in the nonprofit world. But I'm very thankful for our organization. Our board has become incredibly proactive and have even created a compensation subcommittee of the board to ensure that executive management of the agency are treated fairly and equitably across the board. And I'm really proud of that. And you know, we're trying to help other agencies and their capacity building. And part of it is holding up a mirror and looking at where it is you need to give yourself some extra supports or do some work or yay, you're great in this category, you're fine, you know, and we can now look at another goal and that our board is really being a champion. So I'm very proud of them for that. And I appreciate the discussion of it, Adrian, because it is truly something that unfortunately there is a bias about. And it's really a challenging thing. But the statistics are accurate, unfortunately. Thank you. You know,
it's so interesting what you're saying, because first of all, that's amazing. I'm applauding you. You guys are wonderful. That's amazing. You know, it doesn't just come from men either, right? I mean, we create our own biases against each other as women. Someone earlier was talking about, you know, that kind of attitude of, you know, being in groups of women and it's, you know, that there's like the good old boys network, right? You know, and I question like why we can't kind of throw away some of those stereotypes. And I think that we can, you know, but to start to like make some new choices, you know, and Deb, that's like, you know, what you're speaking about there is making some new choices about how office space works, how, you know, how the structure is going to work. You know, if you've got someone who has childcare needs, how can we provide for that? Because that diversity of thought, you know, and experience brings so much to the workplace. And, you know, most every business is dealing with a wide variety of people. So, you know, you need that kind of diversity in your workplace. So you gotta, you know, provide for those people.
May I say something?
Yes, please.
Okay. So just two answers. The first thing you say, well, what do we do? How do we change this paradigm of men making more money than women? And it, within that, the different you know, groups. Some might say in the school system, we say like subgroups of individuals under this paradigm. So there needs to be policy made
in businesses, in school systems, where this doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times things are done because there's nothing in the law books to go against them. So when you want to make significant change, it has to be something that's written and agreed upon by any board or anyone in power. Let's look in Sullivan County. How many superintendents are women? How many? Let's look in Orange County. How many superintendents are women? Is it because they're not qualified? Or what does it mean to rule a school system? How can you be in charge of one? So when we say certain things, and we know the higher you go in education, as far as a position in education, the more money you make. It seems like, just from what I see, oh yes, they can be, women can be assistant superintendents to the man. But like, so when we talk about things like this, you know, I think it's important to look, you know, at perspective. Like, what are we saying? You know, can we do the same job? Yes. Or do they say sometimes women are emotional? Or, you know, let's be real about the conversation. All of us, you know, I just have, can someone answer that for me or look it up online for me? Like, how many women do we have in Orange and Sullivan County that are superintendents? Not interim, but literal superintendents. Anyone?
Sure.
There one? There might be one in Sullivan County.
Who's one? Not interim, literally, yeah. Okay. Superintendent.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and in general, I think that we come up to that question, whether we're talking about judges or whether we're talking about, you know, any sort of position of status, you know, and power and decision making. The idea that at this day and age, we could believe that there is something that a woman can't do. You know, I mean, there may be perspectives that some women may not hold that other men may hold, and vice versa, but we need that diversity again. You know, no person is going to be everything, so let's welcome it. You know, Haley, do you have anything that you would like to add to this?
Yeah, as Ashley was speaking of pretty much the equitable pay that she was receiving in her engineering firm, I think that's it's hard to try to use as a basis, considering that a lot of this is based on a structure of meritocracy, right? Mm-hmm. So like a lot of the times that makes us blind to gender discrimination. I find that these principles, like, built on the idea that everyone, regardless of gender, class, race, sexuality, whatever, has the same opportunities to advance forward if they just work hard enough and if they're just smart enough. I mean, unfortunately, that's not just, right? There are people who are in many different situations, many different backgrounds, who still are putting in just as much work and hard work, but it may not be seen in the hours in the office. So much like my mother, when we came here to the United States, my mom has looked into getting her nursing degree after already having dropped out of med school in her country, coming here, started doing nursing, learned English as a second language, dealing with four kids all under the age of five here in the United States. So it was interesting. She always worked three jobs from as long as I can remember, worked three whole jobs. Now, does that mean that her pay is going to be equitable to someone who's worked as long or just as hard as she has? No, it's not. Unfortunately, it's not that way, because they don't realize what she does when she's home, or the mental workload she carries over to the next day. I don't think organizations that emphasize merit-based cultures really, it just doesn't increase opportunities for fairness and equity, and it just inadvertently is disadvantageous for women. But those are my thoughts.
Yeah, that is such a good point. Thank you for making that point. The women in my life that, you know, that I grew up with were, including my mom, powerhouses, who were, you know, my mom was from the South. She was soft and sweet and, you know, soft-spoken. And she was also like, you know, this really tough woman who got things done and didn't take, you know, we're on the air, so poo from anyone.
And
I think that it's also important to mention that, you know, we as women need to support each other as women in these spaces. And, you know, when we see things that are happening that are unjust, that we say something because it might be us next, right? And it's also fair and correct, you know, to support other people in general, you know, when we know what's right, you know. Most everybody is brought up with some form of that golden rule, you know, I think it's time that we start following it with each other, with women. Let's see where we are in this conversation. I think that we're about wrapped up. I think that you all are amazing. Is there something that someone wanted to say, just like a quick, like, you know, 10 second thought, that anyone is like, just
want to say, I love you all, my sisters.
Thank you. That's so sweet. You know, so somehow the time projected to close the wage gap has increased from 100 years to about 136 years.
I heard that.
It's increased, you know, so, which is so discouraging, but we need to diligently close that gap now. Creating systems of transparent salaries, networks with other women, of support and knowledge, and bravely questioning practices of unequal pay and other practices that are unfair and unequal. Sometimes things are only because they've always been, right? There's no reason why. It's just because that's how it is. How do you see yourself? How do you see other women? We are all unique and contribute so much to our community when allowed to flourish. You are the diversity, my women in front of me and out there. We birth this diversity in our children and in our communities. I desire a world where we can experience the balance of women being allowed to fully be themselves. Where our children can obtain their goals and find happiness. Do we deserve the same as women? Let's break the bias we hold about ourselves and about other women, and model for each other how we want to be treated. Let's hashtag break the bias. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Adrian.
Okay, that's going to do it on our end. You've been listening to a special community conversation for International Women's Day live right here on Radio Catskill. And big thanks to all of the participants. Huge thanks to host Adrian Jensen, Executive Director of the Sullivan County Human Rights Commission. Her guests were Haley Flores, head of Sullivan County Black Latino Asian Caucus and a committee member of the Sullivan County Young Democrats, Ashley Riley, special ed teacher at Minnesink Valley High School and a parent of students who attended the Monticello School District, Tiffany Barrow, current principal at Hudson Valley School and former assistant principal for Liberty High School, and Deborah Warden, executive director of Action Toward Independence in Monticello, serving Orange and Sullivan counties. Thank you so much for listening. Local Edition will return to its regular time tomorrow evening at 6:30. And you want to stay tuned because coming right up, it's Music Emporium with Mr. Kusar Grace. Don't go anywhere. This is WJFF Jeffersonville, Radio Catskill. We're keeping you connected. Happy International Women's Day.
WJFF Jeffersonville, Radio Catskill.
On air at 90.5 FM.
WJFFradio.org.
Listen to us on your smartphone. Download the WJFF app.
Listen to us on your smart speaker.
Like us on Facebook.
And follow us on Instagram.
Radio Catskill, keeping you connected.